So this week, Patrick, we have the absolute privilege of welcoming Claire McColgan, Director of Culture Liverpool, on to Talk On to Walk On. I can't believe she's actually got the time to come on the podcast, because I wouldn't be surprised if she's actually just been sleeping nonstop since spearheading the delivery, the incredible Eurovision Song Contest here in Liverpool. I know that she's not tired of talking about it, though, and that will be one of the first things that we do talk about. But what I do want to know is about Claire's history with our city. She's been here for 30 years. She's not from the city. You can definitely call her an honorary Scouser. She has Liverpool and culture running through her veins, without which I honestly believe Liverpool wouldn't be as firmly on the international stage as a visitor destination, and now as a place to live for our local kids and outsiders coming in. Without Claire, honestly, I think we are absolutely blessed to have her. If I was going to ask you to name some iconic events.
In the nearly 10 years I've been in Liverpool, I remember so well the Giants coming. I think they've been twice now. The Giants coming. LFC homecoming with the Champions League title. The Three Queens, those wonderful cruise ships all together in the Mersey. And of course, Eurovision. Yeah, all of that squashed into such a short period of time that I've been blessed enough to witness. So yeah. Incredible. I'd love to know and get to know the person behind Claire.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. I think the line in the sand, though, for us was the winning the European Capital of Culture in 2008. You don't have to be too old, I don't think, to remember. What I remember is the first iconic event was the giant spider coming and spraying water over us all walking around the city. I also have fond memories with my mum walking around Liverpool, waving at the dogs and the giants. It was just... honestly, you can't buy those priceless moments. But we've also had some really poignant moments too, with the Hillsborough Memorial on the steps of St. George's Hall, with those incredible banners of truth and justice going around the world. And I know that meant an awful lot to Claire as well. Claire gets it. She gets our city. And she has put us back on the international map as far as I'm concerned. I'm excited to talk to Claire and about the confidence that Liverpool now has and where we're going next. So let's talk on to Walk On with Claire McColgan and let's see where it leads. Now, welcome to Talk On to Walk On, Claire. Thank you so much. You're just saying, you know, we all make an assumption of how busy you are, and I'm sure you are busy, but perhaps not as busy as you have been in the last 6 months or so.
No, that's true. I'm sort of slightly just coming to terms with this is what my real job is.
I wasn't going to start with Eurovision, but we could do a whole podcast on it. But let's begin with Eurovision. We can't not, can we? Have you recovered? Have you managed to have a sleep?
Yeah, I have. I mean, I loved it so much. It's a bit... the time went so quickly. The 6 months that we had to do it just flew by. I absolutely loved every second of it. So I'm not in mourning, because I knew it'd end when it would end, you know, of course I did, but I just loved every second of it. So even though it was absolutely full on, it's the busiest I've ever been in my whole life. You don't get to do that very often. So I'm just a bit like walking around and going, what's next? Very crossly. It's just back to normal, isn't it? And that's pretty tough after something as astonishing as that.
Can I just read you a couple of headlines? I got Patrick to have a little look at this morning. I'm sure I know you will have seen them. Okay. New York Times. In Liverpool, Ukrainians find a community far from home. The Paris Soir, I think that's how you pronounce it. No doubt Patrick will correct me. The city of Liverpool adorned in the colours of Ukraine. Sydney Herald. This year's Eurovision host city was the perfect choice. I mean, I'm sure there's many, many more. But even I get emotional reading that.
That's just ridiculous. I'm not even tired.
I know, yeah. You know, it's priceless. What were the magic ingredients, Claire? And how does that make you feel reading those headlines?
It's really odd because you know, things can always... I'm such a pessimist. Things can always go wrong all the time. So I tend not to read things that people say. But I think the thing with Eurovision that was really interesting, especially when I've worked in Liverpool for such a long time, is the fact that because we were doing it on behalf of a different country, it showed a very different side of Liverpool. Mm. And because Liverpool is such a big city, isn't it? It's got a big personality. And if we were just doing a Eurovision, so say the UK had won it and we were doing it and Liverpool had won, we would have done all the things that we did, but it would have been Liverpool, 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 music, music, you know, it would have been all that. But yes, because we were doing it on behalf of another country, all those really beautiful things about Liverpool that are about compassion and telling other people's stories and making sure people feel at home, I think they came to the forefront in everything. So whether that was with little kids doing, you know, I bet the ambassador, the Ukrainian ambassador, was it yesterday, who is still full of Liverpool, full of it. He said to me, his real moment was he went to I think he went to Knotty Ash nursery, and the kids had learned to sign the Ukrainian national anthem in Ukrainian. So they'd learned how to do that. So you went from that all the way through to kind of Jamala doing her piece on the Eurovision Village stage, the wonderful stuff the BBC did with the actual show. And it was quite exceptional, actually. And I think that's what... It's a bit odd with Eurovision because everyone, you know, you talk about those headlines and everyone absolutely loved it, and it deservedly has got huge amounts of praise from everyone, but we would never have done it in a different way. So it's a bit odd, the praise for me, because it's a bit like, isn't that how anyone would have done Eurovision in this context? But I guess because, you know, we've got a shorthand in Liverpool, haven't we? We know how to do things quickly. We know how to work fast. The businesses get behind it. The schools get behind it. You know, we know how to do things quickly. I think all that came into play as well. And it was really wonderful. And it showed a very, very different side of Liverpool, I think, to the world. It wasn't Liverpool on centre stage. It was Liverpool being enabling to someone who was in distress. And I think that was really beautiful.
Yeah, and absolutely examples of that. I think I've heard you say that the ambassador, I think whether it's the same guy that you just mentioned, talked about, well, you didn't just put a flag on things, you yeah. know. I've heard you say that, and I thought that was pretty really powerful, you know. And also you've talked about kids in Knotty Ash. It was the whole. I mean, there's often a little bit of criticism about it's all city centre. It's all about the city centre. It's not about the communities. And you could not argue that this time at all. The kids got to be truly part of it, didn't they? And that, I'm guessing that'll be part of the legacy.
Yeah, and I think that everyone wanted to be part of it. And they either wanted to be part of it because they love Eurovision, or they wanted to be part yeah. of it to show solidarity with Ukraine. So it crossed kind of a whole different sort of load of people that normally would be one thing or the other. So yeah. it had that real cross effect on people. So I went home one day in the lead up to Eurovision, and you know, we did these grants for community groups to get involved with Eurovision that was supported by Heritage Lottery. And there was a note in my door saying, please plant these sunflower seeds, because we're doing growing sunflowers for Ukraine that will come out as a legacy in October. And I just thought, oh my god, I'm actually part of a project as well as really. And I think that, yeah. you know, that's what everyone got excited about. Their kids were either doing Eurovision parties or learning to speak Ukrainian, and we even went into care homes and did loads of work in care homes. So wherever you were, people could get involved in something. And I think people just wanted to be part of it. That's what I found extraordinary. Even if you weren't in the village or had tickets to the show or booked tickets to a bar, you can watch it in your own homes with your own family, but know you're watching Liverpool on centre stage, you know. And I think that's what was really, it's just, they don't come along very often, things like Eurovision. So we should absolutely make the most of them. People just did. They just made the most of it.
Yeah, I love your reference to saying, you know, you were part of a project, because, you know, I messaged you, didn't I? I thought I'll pick my moments. I went just beforehand and right at the end. And I just, from a personal, just to say thank you, I got to sing Patrick and I on the steps of St. George's Hall with Jamie Webster in my yellow and blue. And what a moment. And I know I've heard you talk about how you watch the faces and listen to conversations as opposed to what you just said, reading headlines or reading feedback. I actually almost forgot to sing because I was just looking at the crowds and their faces. I was like, oh God, I'm actually here to sing, Michelle Stoss. I was like, just trying to take it all in. So thank you for that monumental moment in my life.
That's what another interesting one. So St. George's Hall show was put on by the National Lottery in 8 weeks. I mean, it costs millions. We can never afford to do that as a city, but the National Lottery suddenly just went, okay, we're just going to do this because this is a real moment of national significance, and yeah. did it. And that's what I think, that's what this event felt very different about. People just went, oh, we'll just do that. We know you're busy. We know you've got 6 months. Let us just do that bit. And yeah. that's how it all worked, actually, all that jigsaw work, because people took responsibility and just got on with it rather than wait to ask us for permission to do things. It was really brilliant.
Yeah. Was there ever a moment, I mean, you talk about deadlines and, you know, we've thrived on deadlines over the years with sort of your Capital Culture, Liverpool One, the Arena, you know, we've thrived on deadlines, but this was a this was more than a deadline. It was like, you know, everything had to be done yesterday, I'm guessing. Was there any moment where you just went, oh my God, we as a team, because I know you're very much your team, are we going to do it? Did you ever have a moment of doubt?
No, I didn't actually. That's because I think that's really interesting. I think your time is the time you've got. I would have loved, I've just did a bit, someone's doing some research on the cultural diplomacy angle of Eurovision. I've just been speaking to him and I kind of wish we'd had a couple of extra months so I could have cracked the inward investment part of it more, you know, so that if you were coming for Eurovision, come back the week afterwards and see where you want to invest or your kids want to go to. That will come, but it'll be slower and we could have worked, you know, if we'd had more time, we could have done that. But there wasn't a moment in time. And, you know, if we're honest, the city's going through a pretty tough time at the moment, the city council, which is who put this on. So we've got commissioners in, you know, there's lots of things going on with the city council. There's lots of turnover of people and all those things. But even despite that, the city council, because it wasn't just me, it was my team, but it was always street. It was also street cleansing. You know, it was all those different parts of the council. It was legal, it was finance, it was procurement. They put all this on at a time when you're kind of trying to sort yourself out as a council as well. So it was really interesting, but I never once thought we couldn't do it, because you've kind of got, I've been here long enough to know that we just would have done. And because there was no great expectations about it, it wasn't like it was Commonwealth Games or an Olympics where people had done all this before. No one had done what we'd done with Eurovision before. Mm. No one had done it on behalf of a different country. We hadn't done it in this country for the last 23 years. We had government and the BBC literally hand in hand with us. And those relationships, which people never saw, were incredible. For 6 months, the government trusted us with a £10 million budget, which they turned around in about 3 weeks. Mm. So everyone had, we all trusted each other, and because we're all doing it for the right reasons. You know, we're doing it because we're doing it for a different country and we had to get the event on. So I never felt, I didn't feel that once actually, because I knew that if I'd flaked a bit, someone would have propped me up. And that's great teamwork, isn't it? Because it was us, the BBC and national government, getting this together at the time.
And you talk about those figures, and they're huge figures. I think it was 160 odd million around the world that it was viewed by. What I know, the actual figures are still being worked on. What is the potential return on that investment?
Oh, it's huge. I think they've already started to, I think the BBC have already put out the figures that came through and think it's bigger than 116 million. But I think the really thing that's really interesting, and I haven't got the exact figures, I'm really sorry, but is the social media impact as well. So the media stuff that you've read, there's huge amounts of articles in the mainstream media, but the social media impact with TikTok and with all the others is huge. Yeah. I mean, there were people going around getting curly blows. I don't know if people saw that. You know, all the kind of social media influencer stuff was massive, massive for the city. So the return on that investment is huge. You couldn't buy that sort of marketing campaign ever for a place. Yeah. I mean, we'd be spending probably, you could buy it, but it cost us between five and 10 million probably to spend that on marketing the city.
Yeah.
And the return on investment will be over a longer period of time. It won't be a short, quick win, because it will be about people reminding themselves about Liverpool. And we've got a year. So Eurovision passes to another city this time next year, really. You know, go to Sweden. So we've got a year to keep telling that story and reminding people. And it's how we do that that I think is really interesting. But it's probably one of the best investments the city's made, really. I mean, we put 2 million in. You wouldn't. Yeah. It's huge. Yeah. But there are reasons why 20 cities wanted to bid for it. You know, they all got the fact that this would be transformational.
And it wasn't obviously just about a singing festival. You know, you talk about influencers there, like your Scott Mills and your Rylands who came up, you know, they were just evangelizing about, you know, they were literally saying, I remember hearing Scott Mills saying, I want to actually live here now, you know? Yeah. And he talked about that, he's got Eurovision running through his veins, but he talked about the people he met, the staff in the restaurants, the people on the streets, how people got it. You know, it was like a World Cup festival where people weren't just supporting the UK, they were supporting all, which makes it unique, doesn't it? Supporting all different countries from around the world. There's something really magical about that, isn't there?
And I think if you talk, because I'm not a big, you know, I'm not a super fan of Eurovision, but there's lots of people who are. So if you talk to a super fan, they say that's the same. wherever you go, but it's only within that group of super fans. So it's only within the group of fans of Eurovision who are quite isolated in the city or place where they're from. So they've got the village and they've got the arena. I think what happened with Liverpool is it just went across everything. So from the moment you got on the station, so every school, you know, walking through the streets. I mean, I went out of here once with my phone talking to someone. Someone asked me if I wanted directions. And that Scouts Welcome thing can be a bit hackneyed, can't it? You know, people go, but actually for Eurovision, everyone was like, everyone was trying to help everyone.
Literally so taking them there. Literally walking with them.
Literally. I'll walk you over there. And I just think there's those magical moments in a city. We had it for European Capital Culture, and you have it occasionally for other things that you bring in. But there was that real sweet spot, I think, where people hadn't done loads of stuff. It'd been COVID. We'd had a couple of big events before. We'd had a football parade and done a few other things. But this was a chance for the whole city to shine. And people took that. I know people who came in just to be part of the atmosphere, not to go anywhere, but to be part of the atmosphere and to hear people from Europe kind of talking and chatting and to play their part to welcome the world. And that's what people did in 6 months.
And we're laughing because it is, you just go, what?
Yeah, I think as well, we've grown up a lot as a city, and I think probably I've obviously, you know, grown up a lot here, but when we did Capital Culture, I think if I'd done this probably 10 or 15 years ago, even 10 years ago, I would have been really nervous about making everything all right. I would have felt that was my responsibility to make every single tiny little part of this all right. And that would have been really hard. And but actually, I did feel quite relaxed that the city knows how to do this now. So you could leave Liverpool One, absolutely leave Liverpool One to Liverpool One, and they did all their brilliant stuff and brilliant work on there. And we all know, there's like a box of people in Liverpool who you open up the box when we say, do you want to do a major event? Because remember, it wasn't the police's day job. They are doing it. It wasn't, you know, there's a brilliant guy called Liam Feenan who works for the Transport Authority who led the whole transport stuff. And I think he thought it'd just be a nice event to kind of get part of. And my God, he was on the phone at 9 o'clock at night, especially when the transport strikes hit. And, you know, all of that. He was solving problems. But there are those group of people who just go, we know why we're doing this. It's not, it is my day job. It's not everyone else's. And they're the heroes of this, really, because they just go along with it. Go, okay, then.
I know, but you as a leader, we'll talk about that. You know, if you've got somebody at the helm who you can trust, and I know you've been here for about 30 years, and we'll talk about that in a minute, but it's really important. I mean, that collaboration, that partnership, that, like you say, the box of heroes, it's got to be led by somebody, and it's got to be, and I think for me, if you're working for someone, and we'll come on to Sue Finnegan in a minute, because she had a few things to say too. You know, if you're working for someone that you love and trust, it's priceless, Claire. You please don't be too modest, and you know, you need to take that. I have to tell you, it's got to be that you have got to be the magic ingredient as well.
I think, well, look, I think people trust me to know what I'm doing, and they trust me to make a judgment call. Sometimes I get it wrong, but, you know, they trust me to make a judgment call. But also, I think genuinely people know I've got their back. So if we make a decision, whatever decision we make, at the end of the day, that is my responsibility. So if things have gone right, that's my responsibility. If they've gone wrong, that would have been my responsibility as well. And I don't shy away from that. I never have done. And I think also the public on this one were behind us all the way. So, and you always know that because people stop and talk to you. Obviously, they do stop and have a conversation with you about it, but talk to you about it. But they were behind us all the way, and they can see. I think for me, leadership is about making decisions quickly with and people advising you and listening to people, but also them knowing that whatever decision they take, you're going to back them, you know, and you're going to kind of be there whether it's good or bad. And Eurovision was all good, but if it had been bad, it would have been me as well. You know, I wouldn't have shied away from that. And people know that about me, I think.
Yeah. When I mentioned to Sue that you were coming on, I just said, can you just do me a quick note? And the one thing a few things left out of me, but one of the things is that she said she's been working with you since 2003. She's like, I can't believe it. I know.
I can't believe that either.
And also, again, a feat of accomplishment if hardly any of your managers have left.
No.
And she described it as a trusted circle, and how you empower them, you get them to think big, to look around the corners and see before the competition. She did mention the word scatty, but that was the
I really am.
Sharp, comma, super sharp. and empowering, and all these fabulous words to describe you. And I actually did, again, got a tear in my eye, because having watched you from, you know, all these years, it's just wonderful to see women in particular working together for such a long time in doing such an incredible job for our city. You know, freedom of the city, that's what I reckon to Culture Liverpool.
I think there's a real thing about that, though, isn't there? You know, and I have always been myself, so I can laugh at myself. You know, I laugh at myself, and my team laugh at me all the time, because I am absolutely chaotic as well. You know, there is nothing. They always have to have a mobile phone charger with them for me, or, you know, or random things. But I do make them laugh, and I think we laugh together. And I think that's a key thing as well. Nothing we do, you know, I'm not curing cancer. I'm doing things that are really, really important. But at the end of the day, we're doing things that should make people happy. So if they're not making you happy when you're doing them, you shouldn't be doing them. And I think that's a really, you know, we laugh every single day. But also I know my business well enough to know which corners to turn around and which not to. But also I'm quite tough as well. Beneath this, love, you know, smiley, chatty, you know, you can't do what I do without being able to make decisions really quickly and make difficult decisions as well at times. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of trusting yourself, but trusting your team. And I completely trust them. That's why they've been with me for so long. And they know me. And I can lose my temper sometimes. Some of them, you've got story. I've jumped occasionally when I've asked for something that's not been there. But then the next minute, we're having a cup of tea and we're laughing. And I think that's, we're all on a journey. I hate that word. We're all in it together.
Yeah.
And you need to be free to be your whole self in that. And you also need to know when to stop, because I think I push people really hard. But I think I do know when to stop talking about the one thing that's irritating me. Do you know what I mean? And there's that as well.
Yeah, really, really important. And, you know, you talk about teamwork. And again, just moving slightly away from Eurovision, although we may come back to it, and by all means do. The pandemic, you know, 3 years ago, the world stopped and we came to, you know, we had cruise liners and people pouring in off into the Liverpool streets. So then the next thing, you know, everything stopped. And again, I have seen you emotional a couple of times. You've been interviewed. But again, Liverpool put its hands up, didn't it? Mm-hmm. In terms of mass testing, in terms of those, you know, that return. We came to the business one at the arena, to get the hospitality and business sector moving again. But one of the most emotional times I've seen you was in Sefton Park.
Gosh, going to get me crying. It's not hard with me. I think with COVID, it was really odd, because I remember, obviously, everywhere, I mean, they're doing the inquiry at the moment, aren't they? And the council had its own way of dealing with it. And we were, I remember there's photographs of us at a meeting where this was all happening and we were thinking this is going to get worse and worse. And I remember in Chinese New Year, when we did Chinese New Year, saying to one of the young ones who works with us, saying to her, I'm really worried about this COVID. And she went, oh, you and my nan. So your nan are really worried about it. And I keep saying to her, remember me and your nan were right at that particular point to be worried. But it is that thing, isn't it? It did creep up on us really carefully. But I'm an event person, so I think worst case scenario is about basically everything, because that's how you get a good event at the end of it. You have to create scenario planning around absolutely everything. So those skills that we had in our team were really put to brilliant use in COVID, and the chief executive recognised that. You know, he let us lead on loads of stuff, whether it's mass testing or the event research programme, or Without Walls, you know, where we kind of literally, you know, in a few days managed to get tables and chairs to restaurants so that they could open up and make a bit of money during the time when they were on their knees. But I think the kind of key thing, I remember saying at the very, when COVID first happened, we need an economic recovery plan. Like, it was on the day it happened. I said, because this is going to be a marathon, not a sprint. And at that point, I don't think any of us realised how long it would go on for. But it was a chance for Liverpool to kind of reset its economic trajectory, really, and get ready before anyone else was for what would happen. Because there's always a recovery. If COVID had lasted for 2 days, there would have been a recovery plan afterwards. Yeah. So you always have to get ready for what that is. And I think that's what so that's something I'm really proud of. I'm really proud that I instigated the whole kind of economic recovery plan. And the event research programme was just extraordinary, because if you talk about risk, that was a massive risk. And interestingly, I remember at one point, I've never told anyone to support actually, but I remember at one point when people will probably won't remember, but it had turned into a vaccine passport debate, which it wasn't. You know, it was about testing to get events back on. Mm. And we've got kind of four events. We've got the nightclub, we've got the Sefton, we've got Sefton Park, and we've got the business festival. And we there was a load of media around vaccine passports that happened. I think it was on the Easter weekend. And I still remember sitting in Delhi Fonseca car park, just picked up whatever shopping that you had to pick up at the time. Yeah. I sat in Delhi Fonseca car park and I ran Martin Green, interestingly, who is the guy who I work with on Eurovision, who was a BBC guy on Eurovision, because I trust him so much. And I said, have I just done a really terrible thing here? Have I brought the city into huge risk? And have I done the right thing? Because I just doubted. I had that real day of thinking, what have I done here? And he just said to me, he went, just look to the end of the tunnel, Claire. This isn't the end story. Always remember, this is a moment in time and there will be an end point to this story where Liverpool will have done the right thing because no one else is brave enough to. So think about it as bravery rather than, you know, it being about you, actually, which is a really good, which is a really good point. And I went, okay. And he really talked me around. And I'm really so glad he did, because when I stood in that field in Sefton Park, we did something that no one else in the country would do. And we opened up events for the rest of the country and actually for the rest of Europe. And that is the reason the systems that we put into place then led to Eurovision. You know, that way of working, the way of working with government, government trusted us completely. None of us threw each other under a bus. A huge amounts of time when things went wrong with that, that people, you know, that went wrong in the kind of, that just went wrong. And we were all completely, again, working together, national government and local government working together to kind of do that. And it was massively significant for all of us, actually. But yeah, I did have a massive wobble on that one.
And completely understandable. I mean, you've literally just almost described, I can envisage actually what you've just said being taught in schools. You know, it's like it really was a moment of history, Claire. And I can completely understand why you got overwhelmed. You're
also at that point, people were rioting, weren't they? In other cities, if you remember what was happening at that point, people were rioting, you know. So I was just thinking, if I just, you know, you just kind of, I always go, look, I always do this with everything. So it's not just event research program. I do worst case scenario all the time. But that, and we had so much interest. You remember the press interest in it was phenomenal. And again, but then I had that weekend where every station I tuned into had a Scouse voice on it.
Yeah.
Where you heard the, you know, like young people just coming out for the first time. They've been shut up in houses, just going, thank you, Liverpool, you know, to the rest of the country. And again, that was really incredible. And watching the young people come in on that event, like absolutely feeling freedom for the first time, watching them do what they all do at festivals, you know, snogging at the end of it, being sick all the way, walking around going, oh my God, this is really surreal. You just thought that was great, but it was in the middle of COVID. And that, you know, again, that's why Liverpool's a brilliant place to work, isn't it? Because you had the director of public health just going, let's do this together. It wasn't just us.
Yeah, incredible feat of collaboration and courage. Yeah. Actually, Claire.
Yeah, but the whole council, not just from us. I mean, the council actually was brilliant in allowing us to do that.
Yeah. And in terms of the impact on young people, you know, again, you know, you've got,
I've got a girl and a boy.
A girl and a boy, yeah, and 21, 22, around the same ages.
Brilliant, yes, 21 and 14.
Oh, okay. Oh, there you go, I got the second one wrong, but in terms of your daughter in particular, say, obviously it's slightly different for your boy, but that whole coming out, you know, the kids were climbing the walls, you know, what? Yeah. And it, without a doubt, has had different scales of impact on them psychologically. But I'm guessing it's certainly not as bad as it would have been if you hadn't taken that decision. So, you know, on behalf of all the kids who managed to get back out again, thank you, even though I'm not one of them, but I'm a mother of one. And, you know, you see, I saw the impact on all their mates and they couldn't wait to get out again, you know.
Yeah, and I think one of the really lovely things about this wasn't, my Rubes was in Leeds, so she was stuck in a room in Leeds during all of this. But one of my neighbours had just turned 18. So if you think, like, for 2 years, she hadn't even been testing, trying to get in nightclubs legally by that point. Yeah. She'd just become 18, had a passport, you know, had a ticket, and she was just over the moon with going to a circus. But you just forget at that point, they hadn't been out for a year and they hadn't even tried those things that normal 16-year-olds would have tried.
Yeah, there's that rite of passage that they would deny. Yeah, yeah. So that, yeah, on behalf their behalf, huge thank you for that. Just moving on, just quickly to now you. So you was a 21. How old were you when you came to Liverpool?
I was 19 when I came to Liverpool. Yes, a long time ago.
Was it John Moores?
Went to John Moores. Yeah, I came to John Moores, which was, which had just turned to become John Moores, I think.
I was the same at Manchester, but why Liverpool?
A couple of reasons, really. I can't quite remember the real reason, but in my head, I've got two reasons. So my family are from Liverpool. So my grandma's from Liverpool and my dad's from Liverpool. And when I was growing up, my grandma came back to have my dad in Liverpool during the Blitz. So, and the reason why she did that was her family all came from just back Salisbury Street, which is off Scotland Road. But she wanted him to come from somewhere, and I come from a place called Corby, which is in the Midlands. But my dad kind of spent all his holidays here, came back here, was born here, you know, and all those things. And my grandma, we grew up on stories of Liverpool. So we grew up on stories of her dancing with her shoes thrown over her. My granddad was a boxer. She met him in a boxing club called the Silver something, whether I can't remember what it's called. But they met each other here. And they're the stories I had growing up. And I was the first person in my family to want to go to university, but I'm also the only one that's done that. So it's quite nerve-wracking for my mum and dad. And they felt safe here because I've got family here. So that was the safest place to come. But also I love the music.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can't quite believe I'm in this job, because when I was 16, you know, I was playing Echo and the Bunnymen over and over and over and over again in a room in Corby, just with my cassette player like that all the time. So I love the music, and it felt very like home, because even though they're really different places, we had a Steelworks, and Steelworks has been on strike for years. So it was a very
working class.
Very working class, but also very political place that I come from. So I felt quite at home really here.
I love that. I love the fact that your grandmother came back to Liverpool to have the baby. It's such a Liverpool thing to do.
In the Blitz. She had to get a bus because she didn't drive. So I can't quite work out how that happened. But she came back it was the middle of the Blitz. So God knows why she would, because we weren't getting bombed in Corby. So why would she come back and have
a baby? You will be from Liverpool and not from Corby. I get it. And then, so then you come, and then I heard the term, I blagged my way onto a course. What's that about?
I did. It's what I was doing. And also still, I can't really remember what actual degree I came out with, but I was doing, I think, drama and media. I think I was doing English and media. I'd never done drama, because we didn't do drama in school or anything like that. So I'd never done drama before. And there was a really great tutor called David Llewellyn, who I ended up looking at drama and thinking, oh, they're having a lot of fun and I'm actually doing quite a lot of work and they're not doing well. I'll probably say that in drama. And I just walked in and just said, oh, you know, can I do drama? So he auditioned me and sort of said, yes, you can. I was a terrible actress, really, really, really awful. So God knows how I got in. But yeah, I did blab my way onto the drama course. But we had a ball. And that's the reason why I'm still here, because I ended up working at Unity and doing loads of freelance stuff. And all my friends, who I'm still really, really, really good friends with now, all did that course. So yeah, it was a very good blag, but I did blag onto it. And he knew that as well, but he quite liked that about me, I think.
Yeah, but there's a bit of acting that goes with blagging, isn't there? That
was exactly. Right. But it's better acting than I ever did on stage, because I was absolutely awful. I was absolutely terrible. So, yeah, much better talking.
But you had the balls to have a go. And I think that's pretty consistent, I reckon.
Yeah, and I wanted to directing. So I directed while I was at college. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to direct. And then directing is very, very hard if you're from where I'm from, to actually break into where you can start making money from it and actually doing it. So I ended up doing youth work and ended up doing youth theatre and all of that stuff. But actually the job that I'm doing now is like directing on a huge stage. So I've kind of come full circle with that. But yeah, I wanted to be a director. I wanted to be in charge. And I was terrible at acting. Awful. Awful.
But you also got involved in local communities as well. I know you mentioned Notty Ash before. Where did you work locally?
Speak and Dingle. So I went straight. So I did youth theatre in Elsmerport and places like that through the Playhouse. But my first big job was at a thing called Art Skills, which was looking at kids who were at the edge of everything. So school had given up on them. Youth work had given up, you know, everything. They had no hope. And we did a really intensive. It was all funded by Europe. It was, you know, it was well funded. So they got paid to do it. It was brilliant, but it gave them the confidence for their next step. So I taught drama and creative writing. and we did big shows that we took into schools, which kids have been excluded from. So they've been excluded from the school. Then next thing, they're taking a show into that school. And it was just great. We had an absolute ball. And it was part of that time for those people who've got long memories, which was all about education action. So there's loads of big initiatives happening across Liverpool. And we were kind of doing the cultural part of that, which I absolutely loved. And I brought all that to the Capital Culture bit. That's my learning from doing that work.
And we will come to Capital Culture, but just sticking with communities. So it runs through, doesn't it? Your culture, everything that I know a lot of what you, I know we talk about the big scale stuff. And again, we'll probably come back to some of that, but that's happened since Capital Culture. But I know community is at the heart of it for you, isn't it?
It's always been about people having a voice, you know, and whether that's a city having a voice or whether it's a kid having a voice. I'm really about that. And I think I completely believe through and through that the arts, culture, dance, music are really important to kids' lives, because without them, like the people who are the most sparky, in my experience, can go one way or the other. You either go it bad with it and you're really good at ducking and diving and you can blag, you know, that blagging, you can do all of that, or you put it into something where you become someone else and you are really creative. And those creative skills that people have are so sat upon in our education system and so crushed and sweated out of people that's criminal, actually, because not everyone's academic. In the infant school, every parent, whatever class they are, wherever they're from, however much money they've got, they're all in the school watching the school nativity play, or watching the school play, or watching the first thing their kid does. And then all their kids are on stage. And then that gets knocked out of you, unless you've got parents who are willing to pay for it, all that. It gets knocked out of you as you get older. And that is absolutely criminal, because it can make a difference.
Yeah.
Great community art stuff and dancing and music. You know, you look at Stephen Graham and Jodie Comey, listen to their stories, where they came from and what they're doing. That's inspirational. Yeah. I worry that that's not the case anymore, because where does drama fit in schools, and where does dance fit, and where does music fit? It just feels like it's an add-on, and even sport, actually.
Yeah.
And they're the things that take you into a different direction than academia.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, even if you don't carry on with drama, or if you were doing it, and so Hannah was, you know, I did send Hannah off to, you know, she absolutely thrived and loved it. But it gave her this confidence, you know. And also what I say to her is, even if she hasn't gone into it, life can be a bit shit sometimes. And if you've got that love of music, that love of art, that chance to escape real life, you know, and you know the country's on its knees at the moment, in my opinion, and yet you've got your Glastonbury, your Eurovision, escapism, and the tweets that come through from people who are actually struggling, who are then attending these events, and suddenly they just have this moment of feeling uplifted, you know, that life is good. You know, it's absolutely crucial that we continue to invest.
It's so important. It's so important because it's what life's about, isn't it? You know, it is about family time. It's about making memories. It's all that stuff. And that's what great culture does. It makes you, you know, it's the photo on your mantelpiece of someone with a giant or with a Superland banana or, you know, things like that. It's all of that. And it's making those memories together. But I think as well, I think what the arts does is much, even if you're not interested in it, it makes you able to do an interview. Makes you able to speak to somebody and look someone in the eye and do an interview. You know, it gives you just really, really, really basic skills. And that's not the case anymore, especially more and more as kind of people are online and they're on their phones and all of that sort of stuff. They've got to learn to look up. And that, you know, I really worry that with all that going out of the curriculum, it's only going to be people who've got money that can afford to be in that sort of industry. And that's a real loss.
Yeah, massive. But you know, you're doing your best to make sure that it's still, that the kids still have access to this stuff. And, you know, I love the fact that that's at your heart of all of it, you know. And in terms of, but coming now on to the big epic events, I'll bring Patrick in here if that's all right, because are you there?
I'm here.
Yes. You're a bit blurry.
Am I?
Yeah. Let's fiddle you with you a little bit. Yeah, you are blurry, but hey-ho, let's carry on. In terms of the big epic events, I mean, again, Patrick, as an out, not quite as a bit more of an outsider than you were, Claire, because I hadn't realised the connection with your grandma and your dad and all that. But actually, I know Patrick's quite passionate. He always says he came to Liverpool, didn't come for me because we met here, but he says he stayed when he met me. But I actually don't believe that. I think, and he's going to admit it now, that it's the city. because he evangelizes about it, having lived in many cities all over the world.
It is, yeah, Claire, I've lived in Liverpool for nearly 10 years. I came to work in the port back in 2014. And I weekly commuted from the South Coast for 2 years. And during that 2 year period, I fell in love with Liverpool. So I fell in love with Liverpool, the city, before in my third year, I then fell in love with Michelle. I'm in the middle. Yeah, you're the rose.
He likes me today at a distance.
No, but I've lived in London for many, many years during my life. I've lived and worked in London. I lived and worked in Paris. I lived and worked very close to New York. And I've got to say, this city beats them hands down. Do you find, some of my family, but a lot of my friends still live in the south of England. And you were saying you're from Corby in the Midlands. Do you find that when you talk to them, or let's say when they listen to Scousers talking about Liverpool and their love of their own city, I think there must be, and maybe this is the same with all cities, there must be people say, well, you would say that, wouldn't you? You know, Scousers, of course, would say that they love Liverpool. But when I first started working up here and I was doing this weekly commuting and I was sending photos of Liverpool saying, guess where I am, you know, just fantastic views that none of my southern friends would ever have seen. And I would be spouting and boring them to death about what a brilliant place this was. And that I felt that really, really sank in, that an outsider was evangelizing and being ambassadorial about a city. And they almost as if they were listening to me. So, well, Patrick is a southerner, has gone to Liverpool and he's coming back. And we've got to go and visit this place. We've got to see what it's like.
And I think that's the same. Because obviously the cruise is just out of here. Sorry, that's Cream going off in the background now. The cruise liner is just out here. So you hear that all the time when people get off the cruise, because obviously they got off the cruise and they see the Three Graces and they just go, wow. And I think a lot of that came through when we did Capital Culture. Social media wasn't particularly strong then. It wasn't at all, really. Eurovision, it really, really was. And you just saw those images of this city, which was so beautiful, kind of going around the world. And my age group is still surprised by Liverpool. But if you ask my daughter's age group, they kind of get what Liverpool is. They get it as a party city. They all want to be. She comes back more or less every single weekend from Leeds. Yeah. You know, she wants to be here. And I think that is a very interesting generational change around perceptions of the city and what Liverpool is now.
And I read somewhere that a conservative estimate, that I think it was something like 5% of all the visitors who came to Liverpool for Eurovision, if 5% of them returned, it would deliver something like £250 million of additional value over a period of time. That 5% must be very, very conservative. I would think that more than half of the people who came, well, more than half of the people who came to Liverpool for the first time to see Eurovision would go away thinking, I've got to come back to this city again. Yeah. I've got to come back and look at it again.
Yeah, no, I think that. But I also think as well, very unlike us, we were very conservative about all our impact for Eurovision because it's never been done before. So we were actually really conservative, both with the economic impact and with visitor numbers and all of that. Because we just didn't know. We hadn't got a clue. You know, we hadn't got a clue how many people would want to come. We'd never done it before, and the country hadn't done it before. So there was no precedent, really. But yeah, I absolutely think that. And also, over the next year, Liverpool will be mentioned all the time internationally. So when they're talking about Eurovision, all their kind of blogs and all their, they'll be talking about Liverpool 2023 and whichever other city gets it. So we've got a whole year of constantly reminding people how brilliant it was.
Mm. Yeah. Go on. Can I ask a question? I have so much to ask. I'm like, oh, God. So is the aim, Claire, because you talk about your daughter, and Hannah's the same. She's ever in Manchester, but home a lot. You know, I like to think it's to see me, but it's probably the dogs, but it's also the city. You know, it's going out with their mates here. They're just so comfortable and happy. And like you say, they now just expect it because they've grown up with it. The ultimate aim really is to get them to come back. Oh, the ones who are here to stay and the ones who've left to come back and make their lives here. I mean, again, you know, is that always on your mind as well when you're producing these epic events? Is it what we want, inward investment, but we also want people to come and live here and experience the whole of Liverpool?
I think you've got to be careful with events that they don't become, because when they're really successful, they don't become the kind of sticking plaster for everything. So there's got to be lots of other brilliant people in the city working on those different agendas. There needs to be a whole package of things that people come to a city with. Housing needs to be affordable, which it is in Liverpool, yeah, and the region. And I think there needs to, I think the next bit of work needs to be, the events should really be the icing on the cake. They shouldn't be.
Yeah.
They should, and I get a bit, I kind of do get a little bit worried when they become about everything, and yeah, they need to become about everything in order to be viable, because there is something about just doing this for its absolute moment in time, memory kind of stuff. So I never, but they do become about, because you have to justify every penny about, yeah, the economic impact and all of that. And that's fine. But I worry when that becomes the only kind of rationale for doing things. You know, we need to get, you know, we've got a whole new improvement plan for our schools as a city. We've got a whole new, you know, all those improvement plans need to kind of rocket, because that's when you get to bring people here, when you've got all of that settled. And we have as a city, because it's an affordable, beautiful, fun, you know, interesting, safe place to live.
We've mentioned capital culture a number of times, but I, again, a moment in my kitchen going, you know, when we got it, because you just knew. Well, again,
we were the underdogs then. That was a definite line, yeah, where you drew the underdog. We were completely the underdogs for that whole competition. Yeah. Absolutely the underdogs.
Isn't it? Are you ever going to write a book?
Well, do you know what? I'd have said it through. Yeah. Do you know what, though? I think the key thing about Liverpool, when we did Capital Culture, I mean, that whole kind of bit, getting it. And that's why I think the maturity of Europe, you can just see the difference in maturity of the city. Yeah. No matter what we're going through as a city council at the moment, we delivered Eurovision in 6 months without any fuss, fanfare, or anyone falling out with anyone. You know, it was really maturely and properly done. Capital Culture was really all ambition and all kind of passion and all lots of money. You know, there was lots of money for Capital Culture, lots of money, because it was all at that time, at the year 2000, you know, where there was lots of European money, there was lots of government, yeah, there was lots of money. But we weren't experienced, and we learn on the way. We learn, yeah, that kind of whole thing on the way. And I always look back at that and think, where would we have been if we hadn't won? Because 2008, we were going into recession in 2009, the whole country, and we were still sort of partying as a city.
Yeah.
So it kind of passed us by, all of that doom and gloom and fire and a decline kind of stuff. But Capital Culture taught me and probably anyone who worked on it so much about actually not, it was chaos, it was absolute chaos on the lead up to it, and we still did brilliantly. But the reason why we did brilliantly, and that's my absolute point about everything, is the program was always brilliant. All the noise, yeah, around it, all the noise, that didn't matter, because the program itself was always fantastic.
It's an incredible life lesson, that, though, isn't it? Just opening it up a little bit to, you know, self-power of self-talk and having a go, you know, and the lessons that you've learned, even though at the time, you know, were probably incredibly stressful and you know, fallouts or whatever happened. But then you've taken those learnings and just built on them with every single, you know, all these epic events that have happened since, and all, you know, all that you've delivered in the city since. Every, I'm guessing from every single one, there's been a huge learning that you've taken forward into the next one.
Yeah, and I think the main thing is it's always a longer story than you think. So obviously I've had the real privilege of living the legacy of Capital Culture, so I know what it did. So I can look back on it now and think all the stuff we went through to get to that point, hard as it was and stressful, and was immaturity rather than what it would actually end up being in the next sort of 20 years. So, yeah, I do think that. And I always think as well, there was no social media when we did Capital Culture, thank goodness. Because I think that would, actually, you know what? I think some of the stuff that went, that would have just killed us. But it does make you realise that you've got to kind of have a very clean narrative. So I think what's been really good about Liverpool is we've kept, well, one, we've built on Capital Culture, but our narrative has always been about culture. So I don't talk about that all the time, you know, but the politicians all do. So everyone's bought into the fact that culture is at the heart of our regeneration. And that's what generations of politicians as well. And that's really important, because we're not trying to tell 22 different stories of Liverpool. We're not doing that. We've been very clear about what our story is. And I think that is quite compelling. And that's learning, really, for being here such a long time.
Yeah.
Claire, do you I guess you have quite a number of proposals that come across your desk for project for events, big, massive events, medium sized events, whatever. Have you sort of developed now a sort of like a pretty innate feel for what would work in Liverpool and what Liverpool needs and so on?
Yes, but sometimes you're not the only voice in the room, so you've got to be quite careful, because obviously, you know, my passion is things like Eurovision. You know, I'm an arts person, a culture person. I'm not necessarily a sports person as well, but I get what sports do. So I was hugely excited, not about football, but about them winning the parade, so we could do a parade, you know, and that's what we're going to do a parade better than anyone else, and I'm going to do that really well. So you've got to be careful your own kind of passions don't get in the way of what could be a brilliant moment for the city. So we also delivered World Gymnastics this year, but you know, I was very hands off with that. There's a brilliant woman called Jen Folding who did that more or less single-handedly, and that was huge in gymnastics world. That was huge, and again, you know, glowing reports from all the partners who did it. But yeah, you've just got to be careful of that, because I do Eurovision over and over again, because that's my passion, you know. Out, and I do giants every day of the well. But I would do giants every couple of days, because I absolutely love what it does. It's all about making things up, and then people go on that journey, and that's just lovely. And that's my world. But I do appreciate that sporting events are really important to this city. And so I get that completely. I just always want to make them a bit different.
I know what meant a lot to you, and it certainly meant a lot to me. And again, many, 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 many people, was the Hillsborough Memorial and St. George's Hall. And again, the power of those images of the truth and justice, you know, after the inquiry, and the fans are officially and finally absolved of any fault at all. What, again, how does that make you feel when you see, again, it's repeated every year and those images keep coming up and part of history now?
I think, again, that was something that, for all very different reasons, was hugely important to the city, and there was so much riding on us getting that narrative right and that right. Because we didn't obviously know what the verdict was going to be. We didn't know what the inquiry was going to say. And we had, I think we only had like 10 days to pull it together, less than that even. And I wanted it to be about the music that the fans play all the time. I wanted it to feel really authentic in that way. I wanted the mothers and the fathers who'd lost people to have a chance to have a voice. We wanted to make sure that everyone had a name, and that they were a name, not a number. And we were really clear on that. And then we wanted to create an image that showed this city at its proudest. Yeah. And surprise people in that as well, and just like a proud, dignified city. Because we didn't know what the result was going to be, so we had versions of things. And I remember thinking, how do we create, in what is quite a civic occasion, how do you create a backdrop that is going to say what you want it to say? And I think that, and I was standing here with, and the he's the assistant chief executive, a guy called Danny Clare was with me. He's a big Liverpool fan. He'd been with the families on the whole journey, because obviously the city's looked after the families quite, you know, a lot in the aftermath and since. And he was just like, why don't, you know, what about truth? But let's use the words. And we used the words. We made it really bold. We used a certain typeface because it was important. And it was really strong. And I think one of my proudest moments, really bizarrely, was there was a programme, a drama with a very famous actress in it on ITV afterwards. And they used that as an image as part of the history of the country. And it went through, and then you saw that image of St. George's Hall with Truth and Justice on it. And then you know that. And then we had the 96 lanterns as well. And then a big part of me was like, none of them can go out overnight. And we put them out the night before. But then you can't. Because it's a symbol, isn't it? So we had stuff all night with a lighter ready to relight those candles as they'd gone out. And those little things. And then all the club, or they all came out with a single rose, and they put the rose next to the lantern. And that was so all the little tiny moments that probably got lost in the whole thing. Mm-hmm. They were really, really important to get right, because it was about people's kids, wasn't it? And fathers and grandfathers and sisters who died, and what that impact that had. So we had to get it right. And that was the longest time, because you just didn't want anything to go wrong during that.
Yeah.
You didn't want it to go wrong. You were absolutely, this has got to be perfect because it's the world looking at us, but the families are there and it's for them. So it was very, very, that was very hard. It was very hard on the people who were doing it because the pressure of getting that right and not messing that up was huge.
Yeah. And once again, Claire, thank you to you and all the team for that, because again, a moment in history, that is, it's just so important to so many people from across the world. My brother was at Hillsborough. He was a survivor. So that was, again, I think just to know and see our city and see those images, even though he wasn't here, he very much felt like he was. And I'm sure that was the same for so many people. But, you know, I was there on the steps and I've never experienced anything like it, honestly. And so, honestly, just thank you. I'm sure you have been thanked on behalf of families, but just from my...
But it wasn't about that. So it's a really different event. But it was a really different event to do. And I just think that it becomes much more real when you're doing something like that, but you still want to put those productions, because it would have been very easy for us just to do a mass, you know, just to do a very Liverpool mass. And we just wanted it to be really strong and show the city how it had never been portrayed by the media at that particular point in time as well. So we wanted that strength of real significant imagery and poignancy, but really strong imagery. Yeah. And I think one of the real big moments for me on that was the young players. So it wasn't the actual team. It was the I think it was the under 21s that came out. Everton and Liverpool came out with the lantern, came out and laid their rose next to the lanterns.
Yeah,
that really moved me, because that was about youth who'd been destroyed, you know. And so it's all those different things that you're trying to think of. And then also, you know, our team also were dealing with families, trying to get them there, make sure they were comfortable, all of that. It was really hard, but it was so, that's why you work in a city like this, because you know, what an honor to have been able to do that.
Yeah, it runs through your veins, Claire, and I love hearing you. I could listen, honestly, I could listen to you all day. One of my final questions is, has there been, just lightning a little bit, a moment that you go, I will never forget this moment, in terms of laughter, happiness, joy, pride? Is there one that stands out for you? Or maybe one or two, I'm going to have to say, because obviously Eurovision's going to be in there. But anything else?
I don't think there's ever one. I can't think of one moment, because even something like Capital Culture, where something really, you know, you did the opening, I did the opening, and it was like skin of our teeth. I mean, it was really, I wasn't anywhere near as experienced as I am now, and it was really tough. But then we went straight into something else. You never had that moment to go, oh, that was brilliant. You don't normally have that. I think there's little moments that you remember, like through Giants and just hearing kids just shout. Yeah. That's really lovely. But things that are funny make me laugh. Like some woman, I remember a woman, I'm standing behind a woman in a parking queue, and we were paying for parking, and she was just complaining. It was in one of our, not one of the council car parks, I'm going to be clear, but in a city centre car park. And she was just apologising to this person next to her about the price of car park. The price of car park was the same as it is everywhere else in the whole UK, but she was just had to tell this person who travelled to Liverpool that she was so sorry it was costing so much to park. And there'd been this whole free event over 3 days. I love things like that, because that for me is very Liverpool, you know, listening to those.
Yes.
And I remember coming in, and I'll never get the line right, and I wish I could remember the line properly, coming in for the opening of the arena. So when we did Capital Culture, a guy was on the radio with Roger Phillips, and he said something, I'm going to quote him really wrong, he said something like, oh, you know, the hair stood up on the back of my neck, but my heart sank. Well done for that, but my God, you're going to mess it up in the next year. So it's just, and there's things like that that really make me laugh, that that normally...
Brutally honest.
Really brutally honest.
When we were doing some of the research for this session, Claire, I came across the Giants, the dog was Zolo.
XOLO.
And there's a YouTube clip that only lasts about 1.5 minutes, and you probably know it's where he bends into a purple bin and picks out a teddy.
Yeah.
And that's had 4.5 million views.
Oh, really? Oh, that's yeah.
That's just one short clip from the Giants in Liverpool. 4.5 million views. It touched so many hearts, yeah. And people want to carry on watching.
And you know, Claire, I've since lost my mum, but what a lovely memory! I remember my mum going, "Come here, come over here." You know, she's in like a late 60s, early 70 or whatever, and she's like, she was mesmerized. I mean, we all were, but just watching my mum be mesmerized by especially the dog. Everyone just fell in love with the dog, didn't they?
She was calling the dog as if it was a real dog.
Over and waving at him, you know.
Like oh, a child. No, I absolutely love Giants. I do Giants again like a shot after COVID. I absolutely love it. And it's really interesting because my cabinet member now is a guy called Harry Doyle, who is, as he constantly reminds me, is 27. So every time I talk about capital culture, he says, I was in school doing some bananas while you were putting on the screen. So I was actually making, which makes me kind of go, yeah, exactly. he was actually painting them when he was doing it. But his memories are Giants. So his memories aren't capital culture. His memories are every 2 years, Giants would come, and us and our family would go. We'd go out and we'd see Giants, and you know, there's something about culture that is those recurring kind of moments, isn't it?
We were running along the street. We were those mad, crazy ones. You saw it on Dale Street, and then ran down to the Strand, and then ran back up to Castle Street, and it was. Patrick, do you remember?
And then you're bumping into international visitors.
Yeah,
talking to people from South America, from Canada, and so on. It was amazing.
And all the humour that there was with people, you know, and the kind of generosity, people waiting for. I mean, we learned to queue before COVID, didn't we, in Liverpool? You know, people waiting for hours for the Giants to kind of come past. And again, that was like an outpouring of absolute joy. You know, so Eurovision is no different than that was. We just haven't done it for a long time because. Giants, people just love Giants, and they loved it for years after. And what I loved is, like, for weeks after Giants and football parades, you see little bits of ticker tape.
Yes.
And it's like a little memory, you know, it's a bit, it always makes you go, ha, until someone comes and cleans it.
Yeah. Will they ever return, dare I ask?
I would love to, but I don't know what's happened since COVID and what their shows are and what they're doing. Mm. It's hard because it got so big in Liverpool. That anything smaller than those three Giants would be pretty tough to pull off. Because can you imagine if we said we were going to do it again? It would be So I'd need to make sure that we had the capacity to be able to do it in a place. But look, we're looking for what's next all the time. So, and this time last year, I didn't know we were doing Eurovision. So I'm a bit it wasn't on then.
Dare I ask, can you tell us anything at all?
We've got a really big thing for next year, which we haven't. That we're still working through that at the moment. It's not Eurovision, to be clear. We're also talking about what the legacy of Eurovision is in terms of, you know, what happens around. Do we do something big Eurovision-y next year as a like last hurrah? You know, do we build on that success? Definitely. But music for us is a really big deal. So it's what's the next big music thing? It's brilliant to see Taylor Swift announced at Anfield. You know, that's a big deal. But so what is it that's next in that world, and then what are we bidding for next? Because I don't want us to turn into just a city that, you know, what's the next big decision? I'd like to do some sort of big sporting event that was maybe on cycles. I don't know. There's things that I'd like to do. It's having that ambition, and I think the city region's got that ambition as well, because obviously all our events are city region wide. You know, they might be in the city centre, but the impact on the region. But some events are, you could think of some really brilliant things to bring to places that aren't Liverpool city centre if you have a load of fields and a beach. So I'd like to do that.
Just finally, again, I keep coming up with questions. How do you relax?
Watching Coronation Street, which is so awful for a director of culture probably to say. Anyone who's in my world just be like, what? I absolutely love Coronation Street. Loved it since I was a kid. I sit there, I watch it, and it completely relaxes me. And it's not, you know, I absolutely love Coronation Street, which I can't believe I just admitted completely out loud. That's how I relax. And it switches me. It takes me it's the only thing that does it regularly. I can go, I'm watching Corrie, and I've watched it since I was a kid. So watching Corrie is kind of how I relax.
I love that. So,
We won't use that as Claire's title for the podcast. We tend to pick something up.
I know, exactly. Ruin my credibility. Naturally.
I watch Curry.
We can't have something Manchester-based.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, they'll be talking. But I do think that, and also I've got friends who are just absolutely nothing to do with my world, and they bring me back down to earth every time I start thinking that I'm marvellous.
How dare you?
You can't even remember your mobile phone, or you don't know how to text. You know, or spell anything right, so you know they're pretty good at making me completely go back down to earth about stuff.
Oh, I love that. Patrick, was there anything else you wanted to ask about leadership or anything, or did it, no, are we done, are we happy?
Well, no, I can, if we've got time, I can ask one more thing, because about leadership, to pick up something that you said, Claire, firstly you said that, you know, this bit about, you know, that you've got your team to trust you to make certain judgment calls. But then later on, you also referred to when you're having to make decisions regarding artistic matters, cultural matters, that people have fairly strong opinions. It's a very subjective area, isn't it? So I guess once those decisions are made, I think you might have hinted this, once those decisions are made, I guess your team has to rally round.
Yeah, they
may have a different opinion. So your style has to be, your style, I guess, can't be too consensual and collaborative. Occasionally, it has to be quite autocratic. This is what we're doing.
Yeah, and there has been times where I've made a decision and I've been literally like, we're not changing our mind. And then it's when the fifth person's come in and gone, have you really thought this? You're the fifth person. Maybe we need to think about that again. And, you know, but I'm also really good. I am really good at saying when I'm wrong. You know, I'm not someone who just goes, right, okay, that's it. And I'm going to be right forever. I'm very good at admitting when I'm wrong. But I do think you have got to make decisions. Otherwise, nothing would happen. If I didn't make decisions, nothing would happen. So, and sometimes you make the wrong call, but you've got to make that call. And then you've got to take the responsibility for making that call. And I also think what I'm really good at is I know when I'm, what I'm not good at. Does that make sense? So I'm really good at bringing people around me who are much better at certain things than me. So like I'm old, you know, I'm in my 50s now. What do I know what a 21-year-old wants to listen to or do? So we've got very good ways of bringing in people who are brilliant at that and me trusting them and their opinions. And also, I think what I'm really good at, and I think this is quite, like, I don't think, and they may say that's wrong, no one is ever scared to say, Claire, we think that's stupid. You know, it's a very open conversation here, but I will make a decision at the end of it. But I've also, I really respect talent. And I really respect, especially working with artistic directors, and the guy who did the creative on Eurovision, this guy called Robin Kemp, he is absolutely brilliant. And I've just got to trust him, and I trusted him, and he delivered what he delivered for Eurovision, you know, exceptional work. And John Luke is an artistic director for Royal Deluxe. I might have disagreed with him about loads of stuff, and loads of he wanted was really, really hard, and there was lots of eye rolling and all of that kind of stuff in the office. But at the end of the day, he's the artistic director. He knows you've got to, people who are really, really, really brilliant at stuff, you've got to let them fly and you've got to kind of trust in them. And he was genuinely right about everything. So, which is always kind of slightly annoying.
That's interesting. So the trust is going both ways, isn't it? They've got to trust you when you make it, and you've got to trust your team.
Yeah. And if you're bringing like someone like Jean-Luc who did Giants here, you don't then try and direct it yourself. You've got to go. He knows what he's talking about. And he knows how to... you've just got, and your job then is a facilitator. My job actually is a facilitator of people's brilliance, and that's what my job is to do. And sometimes they are big personalities and they can drive you mad and they can be ringing you at 2 a.m. but your job is to get that show on, so, and to take a back step in that as well.
I've just realized we haven't asked Claire the midlife mindset question. So Claire, you've just mentioned your age. So I'm going to go in there. How does that make you feel? How did you feel? When you, did you say you're 50?
I'm 53. I'm well past midlife.
Okay, so no, you're midlife. So, you know, again, full of energy, full of ideas, you know, midlife mindset. Has it impacted you at all? Have you changed? Have you anything got older and wiser?
I think I am older and wiser or not. I think I know. I do. I do think I'm wiser. And I think I know... I'm much more confident in my own skin than I've ever been in terms of knowing what I think needs to happen. But I also think it's about, you know, it's about bringing people in when you start to lose your nerve a bit, because I've got to be really careful. I can't control, you know, sporting event, other things. I've got to bring great brains in that are really, really good at that and trust them that they know what they're doing. I think that's what you get when you're older. You've got to, you can start to lose your nerve a bit and your risk taking. I think that's a learning thing when you're, you know, my age. I don't feel I need to prove anything anymore. Yeah. If that makes sense. So I'm all right to be.
Yeah, it sounds like, again, parallels with the city. You have grown in confidence as the city has grown in confidence and vice versa. Yeah, the city actually truly does come together, doesn't it? And everybody plays their part. Everybody.
Yeah, they do. And if they don't, they tell you. You know, social media is a good thing and a bad thing, isn't it? And I'm just like, let's not look at anyone's tweet until we get to the end of this event rather than the beginning of it.
Yeah, I know you're not on social media. And I use LinkedIn, but that's it, isn't it? You don't use social media.
I use LinkedIn really badly, so I kind of randomly use LinkedIn. But no, I'm not on social media. And I couldn't be on social media. I'd be too obsessive. And I think there's got to be a point where you're not, you know, you're not that. So I think that you need to know yourself.
And yeah, you've got your team assessing it all anyway, haven't you? But I know. I heard you say that you look at the smiles and listen to the conversations. That's enough for you.
Yeah, no, it is. And I think probably if I was 10 years younger, I would be on. I think everyone is, but I just don't feel like I need to. And I would absolutely hate it.
Yeah.
Because you feel like you had to respond to everyone. And that's what I'm sure that's what everyone does, but I'd just be like there all night.
I think you're a bit busy for it anyway. Coming full circle and you're saying you're not busy. So what literally is will we draw to a close? Have you enjoyed the chat? Have you enjoyed the conversation?
Oh, lovely, thank you. Yeah. It's been really lovely. Oh, yes, really nice.
I'm really glad. I'm just, again, on behalf of the city, I'm just going to, you know, blow and smoke up your backside. Thank you. But huge, huge thank you. Thank you for all the memorable moments. Thank you for putting the city back on the international map. Thank you for making that phone call to Martin Green. You know, thank you for being such a brilliant leader. Again, not said by you, but said by your team, you know, who don't leave. You know, huge testament to you, Claire. Swear to God, you definitely need to write that book. We'll turn you into a musical or something. Your story.
We'll still be here in our 80s, all of us here together, still talking about Eurovision or something.
If I hadn't fallen in love with the city, I wouldn't have fallen in love with Michelle.
That's the sort of moments I like to hear about, because that is lovely, isn't it? And also, what happened at Europe, you know, there must be people who met at Eurovision wasn't there for the first time. They've got those relationships made up and all of that sort of stuff. I love all that. It's memories. It's all about. And you know what's really great about Liverpool as well, no matter what sort of nonsense the council goes through or whatever points it does in the last 20 years that I've been here, because this isn't the only year, it's always an interesting place to work, is it completely believes in culture. And that's been a through line. You know, not very many city councils do that. And actually, I think probably what I haven't said is I'm really proud of being a public servant, because I work for a council and I work for Liverpool City Council. And, you know, there's lots of stuff that is said about the council, but actually I'm really proud to work for it. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, it is really important, because they do get a bad press. It is interesting, actually. I always think of you slightly separate, but I shouldn't. I don't know why.
No, I probably think of myself as slightly separate, too much to everyone's annoyance in the council. But I am really proud of working for the council. And I really, you know, especially during COVID, I think it was an exceptional response by everybody. And you're part of a much bigger team. And I couldn't do what I do without the support of Liverpool City Council, both politically and administratively. I just couldn't do it. Yeah. You've got to have, you know, when you want to shut a street, you need people who would just go, all right then, Claire, we'll do that for you then. You know, that wouldn't happen if I was outside the council.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really powerful message to end on. Claire, thank you so much. Thank you for sparing the time. And, you know, thank you for, you know, coming to Liverpool back when you were 19. And as I say, and your nan or your grandma will be looking down on you without a doubt.
I would think that. I do think that as well. Sometimes I just think, God, if she'd lived and kind of, you know, was here, what would she think? And
I don't know. There's somebody looking down on you, because you've created all these moments, but there's been a few gifts in there as well, hasn't there? I mean, Eurovision was the absolute gift, the last one in terms of timing.
It was an absolute gift. It was an absolute gift. And also the fact that it will never happen ever like this again. We'll never be forgotten in that story, because we'll never be, hopefully, we'll never be doing it on behalf of the country that's at war again. Yeah. and we hadn't won it for 23 years. So, you know, it'll be very different the next city that does it if we win it in the UK again.
Yeah, well, here's to the handover to Sweden and all the build up to that. And I'm sure there'll be another part. I'm definitely getting my ABBA outfits ready, I'm telling you.
Exactly. Sweden.
you can be my Annie Fridge or whatever name.
I can't sing a note. I can't act. Sorry, I'm a terrible director of culture.
On that note, thank you for joining us on Talk On To Walk On, Claire, and wish you the very best for the year to come, you and your fabulous team. Good luck with it all. Cheers,
thank
Claire.
It's lovely meeting you, Patrick.
Thank you.
And you too, Claire.
If you've enjoyed listening to our Talk On To Walk On podcast and you want to know more about our coaching, mentoring and talks offer, then go to our website, talkontowalkon.com. We would love to talk to you about how we can share our many life lessons so you, your team or your students can walk on in life with confidence. If you're listening to the audio version of our podcast, don't forget you can also watch full episodes and view highlights on our YouTube channel. Obviously, if you would like to sponsor our podcast, we would also love to hear from you. So let's connect, have a conversation, and you never know where it will lead.